Hello and welcome to Global Datapod Research Wrap. I'm your host, Nora Santivani, and joining me today to discuss global and regional inflation developments are Mike Hansen and Raphael Bern-Aguerre. Hi, both of you. How are you doing?
Hi, very good. Hi, Nora.
Great. Welcome back, Raphael, from your holiday. All right, so we have just published our latest monthly Global Inflation Monitor report for March, and I think however we slice the data, this looks to have been another sticky month for inflation. We had 2 months, and this is a third month in a row, as we've put it. So for the third consecutive month, global core consumer prices were up 0.3% month on month. Headline CPI was similarly strong. On the over-year-ago rates, it hasn't been a whole lot of movement. The core number ticked a little lower to 3.5. Headline ticked a bit higher. But if you look at the three-month annualized run rates here on both core and headline, we're running at 3.7%. So, you know, to me, that suggests we're probably not going to get a very material slowing in the very near term on over-year-ago inflation. Indeed, our forecasts have core inflation easing only modestly to about 3.3% by the middle of the year. So I think all in all, our top-down view that the global disinflation process would stall in the first half looks to be playing out. Now, if I dig just one level deeper, we can see that a lot of the stickiness is still predominantly linked to core services inflation, which is running near 5.5% in the 3 months to March. And those gains are pretty broad-based across countries, across components. At the same time, core goods deflation looks to have ended. We're not seeing any significant upward pressure, and arguably a little bit less upward pressure than I personally would have expected. So we're kind of flatlining here. But if we take U.S. used car prices out of it, then there's a bit more of an upswing in core goods prices as well. They've been rising for four consecutive months. So effectively, we are losing the earlier disinflationary impulse from energy and also from core goods here. Okay, let me briefly just pause there. Mike and Raphael, is there anything you'd like to pick up on in what I've said at the global level before we go into the country details?
I mean, I would agree that the lack of upward pressure on goods is a little bit of a surprise. We obviously had written about, you know, some factors earlier that might lead that to that be a bit stronger. But again, used car prices are kind of the wild card there. But I also think it's interesting that we had a pretty prescient call that you'd have stickiness. It certainly seems to be playing out. And I guess that one of the things we'll discuss as we go forward is just how likely is it that's going to fade. I think a lot of our bottoms-up forecasts still presume that that's going to fade. It's be interesting discussion about what factors we think might or might not lead that to go forward. I think certainly on the U.S. side, at least, the risks that this could stick around for longer is certainly becoming more salient, more apparent.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the big question. Does sticky mean stuck? are we actually getting stuck here, or is it just 3 months of stickiness?
For how long? Right, that's the question.
And for how long? Yeah, I mean, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the call, we've got core inflation here coming down to 3% OIA, which is still, you know, too high for comfort, really. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you on the core goods pricing. When I look at the PMI surveys, for example, the latest signs on pricing suggest that some of the firming we had seen earlier on is kind of unwinding a little bit. The supplier delivery times are shortening. The global supply chain pressure indicator that we like to look at seems to be stuck near its long-term historical averages. The container shipping costs have receded somewhat. So, you know, I think it's still more likely that we're maybe picking up a little bit in the near term, but it, you know, it doesn't look like there's going to be a meaningful impact. And then China is still exporting deflation to the rest of the world, although, you know, that impulse has faded a little bit relative to the second half of last year. It's also become a little bit more nuanced across countries in terms of its impact. But Raphael, anything to add on that?
I mean, everything that you said sort of resonates with things that we can see in terms of Europe generally. But maybe the point, and we can talk further about this when we get into the details, that stand out when we look at the Euro area data is Obviously stickiness, but maybe at a slightly lower level. The core good aspect that we've seen as well is a March data that was softer than what we've seen in January, February. So that was a bit surprising to us as well. And this stickiness is really services. So we can elaborate on that, but I think we're all looking at the drivers of domestic inflation, trying to wonder whether the pressure on services prices is going to come down as we expect in the next few months.
Right. Okay. So before I turn to the country level, maybe we can I'll just speak briefly on energy and food prices. It's nice to have a kind of more comprehensive view, not just on core, but also on what's driving headline here. So consumer energy prices continued to rebound in March. And in the 3 months to March, we're actually up 6.4% annualized now. So that's a pretty big swing from the negative numbers we had late last year. I guess the good news that this increase doesn't appear to be denting consumer spending too much for now. And, you know, we've pointed to generous wealth effects as part of the explanation for that. But headline inflation is certainly picking up in momentum terms, as I noted. And we have raised our global headline inflation forecast for the second quarter to 3.2% from 2.7%. So those forecasts as well have been drifting higher. Now, I think offsetting some of the upside from energy, we have had good news on food prices, and global food inflation remains pretty well behaved here. It's actually moderated to just 2.2% annualized through March. So that's now back below the pre-pandemic average. Moderation in DM food inflation has driven a lot of that slide, but in EM as well, the recent El Nino-related pressures look to be subsiding. We still see some upside risk in a couple of places like South Africa, but broadly speaking, you know, it feels like food inflation is not really causing us much concern in EM with respect to headline inflation pressures. And then, you know, in the countries where those pressures had been strong in LATAM, for example, Mexico, we've seen those pressures fade out. Broader measures of food prices globally as well seem to be quite well behaved here, although there was a bit of pickup in March due to a jump in edible oil prices in the FAO food index. All right. So anything on those two from either of you? Because otherwise, I'd like to spend a little bit more time talking about the U.S. core inflation numbers, Mike, if that's okay. Obviously, we had a very strong core reading, very strong super core inflation reading, actually. What's your sense here? I mean, this has been the third firm month. Any caveats here we should be aware of, or is this sort of genuine strength in U.S. inflation in your view?
So I think that you can always pick the inflation numbers apart and find bits and pieces that someone thinks is unreasonably strong or unreasonably weak. You can play that game until at some point you're talking about inflation x inflation, right? But I think that you look at whether it's the super core or some of the more common measures like the trimmed mean or the median that are often cited, produced by some of the regional feds, they all have shown a move upwards. And you don't even have to restrict yourself to services for that to see the evidence of that, right? So I think if you are focusing on what's happening at kind of the front end here, the 3 month or 6 month numbers, they are looking a bit concerning. And it certainly is reflected in the change in rhetoric at the Fed. You're still seeing, you know, OIA measures come down, but I think you're probably going to see inflection points in that before too long if we continue to print things, you know, these 0.3s and 0.3 pluses, right? We're looking for 0.3s on headline and core for Friday's core PC, for example. And so, you know, if you do a little bit of math, you can get down to about 2.5% on an OIA basis by June if we print 0.2s from here going forward on the PC number, core PC, which the Fed's focused on.
But not on the core CPI, right? So on the core CPI, it is going to be that wedge is still there, right?
Wedge is there, and the wedge is large, right? And again, the Fed has said, and we'll see how long they can stick with it, they're really focused on the PCE numbers, right? But obviously there's some co-movement of these things. You saw CPI spike back up on the super core, and you've seen PCE follow it, even though the wedge is still large, right? So just to finish
getting
the thought there, you can look at health insurance, you can look at airfares. There are obviously some funky things going on month to month, but I think the bigger picture there is one where you still have a lot of firms.
Yeah. Okay. So you said we can get down to 2.5%, right? So you've taken the kind of more benign view in the way you've presented it. But what if instead we're printing at 0.3s? Like, where does that really leave us for the June print and beyond? And, you know, how much of a headache will that give the Fed really?
Yeah. No. Look, if you're printing 0.3s, you can't get much below 2.7 on a year ago basis, and you'll actually be moving back up by the time you get the June print for the July meeting, and you'll be above 3 for basically the back half of the year, right? So you not only basically need to print sub 2s, even then base effects will kind of lift your inflation rate in the back half of the year with 0.2s. You really need to be printing below 0.2s on a monthly basis to have a sustained move down towards 2% inflation target over time. And not impossible, not clearly what we're seeing in the data to date.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the questioning I get around the U.S. inflation numbers here is what's going to happen to rental inflation, right? And I suppose it's anyone's guess, but you know, numbers there have been a lot firmer than expected. And you know, how much of a move down in rental inflation can we see over the next couple of months? And then how will that interact with a potential rebound in core goods inflation, right? Because as we've said, used car prices have been pulling down overall core goods pricing. But what if that starts to turn? Are you seeing anything in the industry data to suggest a turn there? And how do you see the interaction between potential moderation in rental inflation vis-a-vis a rebound in core goods?
Yeah, now we're pivoting a little bit from talking about kind of macro stories to more of these micro component stories.
Yes, but, correct. Yeah.
On the rental inflation side, we've certainly been surprised. It's basically moved sideways in terms of the monthly inflation rate for the better part of a year now, if you kind of take the bigger picture here. We've been forecasting, as has basically everyone on the street, that it would continue to gradually move lower. And the reason for that is that you can look at a number of measures of front-end market-based rents that have come down and come down appreciably, and appreciating that the way in which rental inflation is expressed in the CPI, namely as kind of this long distributed lags of rents that typically last, you know, 12 months, it wouldn't be a surprise. And you know, Powell and other Fed officials have argued that, oh, with time, these things will come down. But of course, it hasn't. There's an argument, counter-argument that's been made that we've been giving some thought to about this idea that there's some large gaps between what's happened cumulatively on the inflation side between, say, market rents and what's in the CPI, and that might suggest a slower process moving down. So we're going to monitor that. We're going to continue to look into that. But that certainly is a risk. And of course, as you mentioned, you know, we've had core goods be relatively soft. It's not as soft as it was, say, 3 or even maybe 6 months ago. But used car prices still are pointing downward, recent data. That will probably be, again, based on industry data, which we can get a kind of a maybe 2 to 3 month ahead, look ahead on that. We'll perhaps still be negative, but that negative force will be moderated, right? So all of these are pointing in direction for things that themselves are adding a little bit of additional stickiness to what I think has broadly been very much a super core or core services like shelter story, right? So just nothing's going quite the right way right now, which hence I think has been an important part of why the Fed has changed the way in which they're communicating the likelihood of rate cuts coming in the near term.
Yeah, okay. We definitely need to see more good data. Okay, so Rafael, can I pivot to you on the euro area? It feels like the euro area has its own core inflation challenge here. And especially when I look at services inflation, it's still running quite firm. At the same time, I personally have held the view for some time that the euro area has somehow a better chance of bringing inflation back down to 2% than, for example, the US. And this is obviously a much more medium, long-term outlook that we can debate. But how are you kind of, first of all, how are you seeing the March numbers? And if you could kind of talk us through also the outlook for the next couple of months. Obviously, we have the June ECB meeting where we're looking for a first cut. And, you know, there's increasingly debate around how the ECB might be able to cut before the Fed. How do you see the inflation numbers panning out in the near term?
Well, given what has been said just before in the US, I would qualify the latest data as better in the sense that the pressure, given the March number, seems to be slightly lower. Obviously, not something that is conclusive that tells you that you are going to make it, but the pressure is slightly softer. So if we get into the numbers, I mean, we had a core price increase of 0.26 in March. So something along the lines of what we had in January, February. If you control for something important that played out in the region this year, we had the early Easter. You need basically to assume that there was some upward effect on the early Easter March print. So if you control for that, you basically close at 2.2. Eventually, you even slightly below 0.2. The number that Mike mentioned before as something that would validate return towards 2%. So we had it in March. It was just a one-off. Mm-hmm. But effectively, we were slightly below that. Now, you're pointing towards something which is very, very important. There's a huge divide between the core goods part and the services part. So basically, core goods was sort of flat. Services was significantly higher. We're talking about 0.3, 0.4 over the last few months. So really a sense that there is a decent amount of stickiness, that there is a challenge towards core inflation returning towards 2%. There's alternative measures you can look at, like domestic inflation. And effectively, there's a view there that there is stickiness. We looked at a whole bunch of things trying to look at the possible evolution for the next few months. Stickiness in services is probably something that will remain there for a few months. So in relation to the ECB, because you mentioned that, I mean, we have a forecast which is slightly above them. They have a forecast with core inflation going down to 2.5% in the second quarter. We have something which is 2.7. So there's a sense that they're going to head into the June meeting with potentially some surprises to the upside in terms of core inflation, which arguably is going to remain linked to some stickiness in services price inflation. So that's really the key. March was good. And suddenly we assume something which is something which is a weakening of price pressure for the next few months. We have a run rate for core which is plus 2.2, which is not far apart to where it was over the last 6 months, but it's slightly below. So we assume some progress, but we need to see something that basically improves on services part. So services, there is element of wages which are still strong so far. So there is cost push inflation that is there in the system. It's important to assess how the corporate sector is eventually going to offset that part. I would say that there is an interesting piece of data that we've been looking at of late, which is the price indices of the European Commission survey. They've come down. We've taken this as an indication that domestic inflationary price pressure are coming down, which is for us an indication that the profit part or the margin part eventually is going to do slightly better in the coming month.
I see.
Rafael, can I follow up a little bit just quickly on kind of US-European comparisons? I know we'll talk about central banks in a minute here, but if I take it back to kind of the macro level for a second here, it seems like the US has had, you know, above trend growth. Europe's been suffering from kind of below trend growth. You would tend to think that would drive a difference in inflation dynamics, whereas both look sticky and high on the services side. And I guess one potential explanation, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, is that you've had much more of a supply response in the US that has helped perhaps to some extent mitigate the upward pressure. You've actually not had that in Europe, which maybe has exacerbated some of the upward pressure. I'm curious how you're thinking about those things as you think about the inflation outlook going forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. We've been struggling on the productivity side. So any pressure that is coming from wages is something that is not offset by productivity and is translated by strong labor cost growth. So that's a key point. Now the demand part that you mentioned in some ways is what we think will help in terms of taming some of the pressure on inflation via the unit profit channel. This is certainly what the ECB assumes in the very short term. Maybe they are a bit ambitious on that in terms of the first and second quarter, because they assume a decline in unit profits effectively following something which was a decent gain in the fourth quarter. But we too think that having an economy that is basically running below potential is something that helps in terms of taming the pressure coming from profits.
Going forward, even though you do have growth picking up, right?
Yeah, we do have growth picking up towards something which is potential growth. So there's a challenge here because, I mean, yesterday we saw the PMIs. They surprised us to the upside. They prompted us to raise the forecast in terms of GDP. Yeah. And effectively, there's a question which is there a signal for more growth to come? And eventually, if you have an economy that is turning to something which is above potential growth, in which case, that argument of weak demand is something that maybe we'll have to rethink. Now, there could be a divide that is interesting, which is we can see from data on the good side that demand is weak. So maybe we retain an element of weak pressure coming from the core good side. The services number yesterday on the PMI was strong. Maybe the demand on services is strong, and maybe that pressure is going to be more concentrated on services, which basically doesn't help because this is where we'd like to see some improvements.
My sense overall, though, is that in the euro area, the inflation data still have some kind of temporary influences from the past supply shocks, right, which were much stronger in the euro area than they were in the US. So I think, you know, if we're assuming that there's still some of those residual shocks still getting removed from the inflation numbers, I think for me, the overall seems to be still a better chance for euro area inflation to come down closer to target and have this complete disinflation, which is what we have in our forecast, by the way, right? So
yeah, I will add a point to that. I think you're right. There's probably a little left, but let's assume there is a little bit and that helps. The other key channel is one which is linked to wages. And there you need to have a view on wages. And the view that we've laid out is one where a lot of the increase in wage inflation was related to inflation itself, which basically leaded the household sector or people on wage negotiation to claim for higher wages. And if we're right in saying that wage negotiation had a huge impact on wage inflation itself, then the fact that headline inflation and core inflation have declined by a large extent should mean that going forward, wage inflation itself is going to fade by a large extent. But this is not labor market related. This is inflation related, and inflation has come down to a large extent.
Yeah. I think that's sort of a broader theme across countries. But let me just steer the discussion back here towards the inflation monitoring side. And maybe we can, I'll just talk briefly about a few other countries and regions which we haven't covered. I think Japan obviously is a critical one. We had the core inflation measures remaining above the 2% target, strong demand, rising wages, all putting services inflation up 2.7% for the quarter. So that stickiness in inflation over the next year, we think will remain here. And obviously we've now got the yen depreciation adding to that. So all of that we think will prompt upward revisions to the BOJ's inflation forecasts and leave the bank on track to hike at the July meeting and accelerate the pace. I think in other DMs, I would note, or we have been noting, that, you know, there are a couple of countries where core inflation has been coming off. It's largely been led by goods than services, but overall core inflation has come down to pretty moderate levels that are below central bank target ranges. You know, Sweden, Canada, we've talked about. In EM as well, we've got a couple of countries, Israel, Poland, parts of EM Asia, where core inflation is running quite low. So, you know, there's a little bit of differentiation here, and countries especially where we've had subtrend growth and supply shocks have had been stronger and are now unwinding are certainly in this camp. Elsewhere in EM, I would say the common theme is still one of stickiness in services inflation. So that's very much similar to the DM. And if you combine that with the repricing of Fed policy path, certainly there's a sense that central banks are have already or will begin to slow the pace of their easing. You know, in EM Asia as well, they're probably going to be remaining on hold for longer. So there's a sense that the stickiness in services inflation is also spilling over into EM, central bank reaction fund. Yes.
How much risk do you think there is of more Bank Indonesia's where we might get even a surprise rate hike?
Yeah, I mean, our view is that rate hikes are still pretty unlikely. Of course, we had that surprise hike in Taiwan, and we certainly can't rule out another one there. I think the key for EM Asia is that, remember, central banks actually have as part of their mandate, not just price stability, but also FX stability. So they have to keep an eye on their exchange rates. And then that whole currency complex has been under depreciating pressure, partly linked to what's happened in Japan. So I think that's certainly putting upward pressure. We've seen some renewed, of course, increases in energy prices that I alluded to. That's pushed up headline inflation in a couple of places. So we've generally been removing cuts. We removed cuts in Thailand. We now have them on hold. We look for shallower easing in Korea. So we pushed back the start of easing to the fourth quarter. We delayed rate cuts in India. Elsewhere, South Africa as well, we pushed back cuts. And then we've revised our views towards more gradual easing in Brazil in the near term, Hungary. So, you know, I would say the trend definitely has been in that direction. But again, you know, part of that is just a reaction to the repricing of the Fed policy path and some concerns around FX weakness in places. All right, so I think we can leave it there, just being mindful of the time. This has been a great discussion, so thank you to both of you for joining, and thank you to our listeners for tuning into the Global Data Pod Research Wrap. We hope you can join us on the next episode. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read the JP Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Co., all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on April 24, 2024.